metaphysics or whatever you want to call it, but it's very, very simple. Listen to this. Every time I have a concept, it is something that I could apply to a number of individuals. We're not talking about a concrete particular name like Mary or John, which doesn't have a meaning. But when I have a concept, all other words are words that apply to any number of individuals, countless individuals. Concepts are universal. For instance, I say tree, or I say leaf. Now the word leaf could be applied to every single leaf on that tree. You have the same word for all those individuals. You have the same word for all the leaves on all the trees in this campus, the big ones, the small ones, the tender ones, the dried ones, the yellow ones, the green ones, banana leaves, oak tree leaves, all types of leaves. If I say to you, I saw a leaf this morning, you really don't have an idea of what I saw. Let's see if you can understand that. You do have an idea of what I did not see. I did not see an animal. I did not see a dog. I did not see a human being. I did not see a shoe. You have some kind of a vague idea of what I saw, but it isn't particularized. It isn't concrete. The Spanish philosopher Unamuno says, man, human being. But let's stick to man. Not primitive man, not civilized man, not a grown-up man, not a child, not male, not female, not of this particular age or the other, not of this culture or the other. In other words, not man. Because the human being is found concrete. You never find a universal human being like your concept. Your concept points. But it is never entirely accurate. It misses uniqueness. It misses concreteness. For the concept is universal. And when I give you a concept, I give you something. And yet, how little it is I have given you. So, the concept, so valuable, so useful for science. For instance, if I said of every one of us here that we are animals, that would be perfectly accurate. But you know, we're something more than animals. And so if I said Mary Jane is an animal, that's true. But since I've omitted something essential to her, it's false. It does her an injustice. And when I call you a woman, that's true, but there are lots of things in you that don't fit into that concept. You are this particular, concrete, unique woman. That can only be experienced. It cannot be conceptualized. That I've got to see for myself. I've got to experience for myself. I've got to intuit for myself. The individual can be intuited, cannot be conceptualized. It's beyond the thinking mind. Lots of you would probably be proud to be called Americans, as lots of Indians, foolishly I think, would be proud to be called Indians. Because what is American? What is Indian? It's a convention. It's not part of your nature. But never mind about that now. And yet, even if you were proud to be called an American, if someone said to me, in reply to my question, who's Claire? And he says, Claire, she's an American. Oh, American. Ah, well, I know, I know. Hey, she was quite proud to be an American. But when I said American, I know she feels insulted. Say, wait a minute, you really don't know. All you got is a label. You don't know me. See what I mean? The concept always misses, omits something extremely important, something precious that is found in reality, which is concreteness, uniqueness. Very important to understand that, as you recall, that the word, the concept, is not the thing. And so, the great Krishnamurti puts it so well when he says, the day you teach the child the name of a bird, the child will never see that bird again. How true. The first time that the child sees that fluffy, alive, moving object, and you say to the kid, sparrow, sparrow, then tomorrow, when he sees another fluffy, moving object that's similar to this one, he says, oh, sparrow, I've seen sparrows. I'm bored by sparrows. You know something? If you didn't look at things through your concepts, you'd never be bored. Every single thing is so unique. Every sparrow is so unlike every other sparrow. Even in its similarity, great help to find similarities so that we can abstract, so that we can have a concept. Great help from the point of view of communication, indication, science, but also very misleading and a great hindrance to seeing this concrete individual. And what about this particular sparrow? It keeps changing, you know, from moment to moment. But we're coming to that immediately. The first drawback in a concept is that the concept is abstract. Reality is concrete. I don't think anyone would quarrel with that. So if all that you experience is your concept, you're not experiencing reality, because reality is concrete. The concept is a help to lead you to reality. But when you come there, then you've got to intuit or experience it directly. Second quality of the concept. It is static. Reality is in flow. We know enough to realize this. We have the same name for the Niagara Falls. But that whole body of water is constantly changing. How could you ever invent different words for each little movement of the river? You've got a word river, but that water is constantly flowing. The word remains static. You've got one word for your body, but all the cells in your body are constantly being renewed. That's another drawback in the concept when it is compared to reality. And to give you an idea of what it is like, let's suppose there's an enormous wind outside here, and I want the people in my country to get an idea of what an American gale or hurricane is like. So I capture it in a cigar box, and I go back home and say, behold. Well, it isn't a gale any longer, is it, once it's captured? Or I want you to get the feel of what the flow of water in a river is like, and I bring it to you in a bucket. Well, the moment I put it into a bucket, it stopped flowing. The moment you put it into a concept, it stopped flowing. It became static. It became dead. Something like a frozen wave. A frozen wave is not a wave. A wave is essentially movement. It is action. And when you freeze it, it's not a wave. Concepts are always frozen. Reality flows. finally, if we are to believe the mystics, and it doesn't take too much of an effort to understand this, or even believe it, one can see it at once. Reality is whole. Words and concepts fragment reality. They give us little fragments. That is why it is so difficult to translate from one language to another, because each language cuts reality up differently. The English word home is impossible to translate into French or Spanish. Casa is not quite home. It has associations which are peculiar to the English language. Every language has untranslatable words and verbs and expressions, because we're cutting reality up and adding something or subtracting something, and usage keeps changing. Reality is a whole, then we cut it up and make concepts and words to indicate different parts. But if you had never seen an animal in your life, and one day you found a tail, just a tail, you've never seen an animal in your life, and somebody said to you, that's a tail, would you have any idea of what that was, unless you had some idea of what an animal is? And unless you had some, couldn't be an idea, because ideas essentially fragment. Some vision, intuition, experience of reality as a whole. Would you really know what each fragment means? This is what the mystics are perpetually telling us. Words cannot give you reality. They only point. They only indicate. You use them as pointers to get to reality. But once you get there, you cannot, your concepts are helpless. Like the dispute that a Hindu priest had with a philosopher who claimed that the final barrier to God was the word God, the concept God. So he went to debate with him. And the philosopher replied, "The ass that you mount and that you use to get to a house is not the means by which you enter the house. You've got to dismount. You use the concept to get there. Then you dismount. You get beyond it." Now, you don't need to be a mystic to understand this, that reality is something that cannot be captured by words or concepts. If you would understand, if you would know what reality is, you would have to know beyond knowing. Do those words ring a bell? Those of you who are familiar with the cloud, you've got to go beyond knowing. You've got to know beyond concepts, beyond words. Poets, painters, mystics, the great philosophers, they have intimations of this, intuitions of this. Now comes the big part. Let's suppose that one day I'm watching a tree. Until now, every time I saw a tree, I said, well, you know, tree. But today when I'm looking at the tree, I don't see a tree. At least, I don't see what I've been accustomed to seeing. Suddenly I see something with the freshness of the vision of the child. There's no word for it. I see something that's unique, that's flowing, that's whole and not fragmented. And I'm in wonder. Now when I come back and you say, what did you see? What do you think I'd say? No word for it. There is no word for reality. Because as soon as I put a word to it, we're back into concepts again. I could tell you a story. And if you have the sense of a mystic, you might get a clue to what I'm talking about. But I cannot give you a description. My dears, if I cannot express this reality that I experience or intuit when I look at a tree, when you talk about expressing God, what are you talking about? If I cannot express this reality that is visible to my senses, when I penetrate, I get beyond words and concepts and see, how does one express what cannot be seen by the eye or the ear? How does one find a word for it? And you're beginning to understand what Thomas Aquinas, Augustine, and all of them were saying, what the church teaches constantly when she says, God is mystery, unintelligible to the human mind. What the great Karl Rahner said in one of his last letters when he wrote to a young German drug addict who wrote to him for advice and talked to him about God. He says, you, theologian, you talk about God. How could this God be relevant in my life? How could I get rid of my drug? And Rana says to him, I must confess to you, in all honesty, that for me, God is and has always been absolute mystery. I do not understand what God is. No one can. We have intimations, inklings, that we falteringly, inadequately attempt to put into words. But there is no word for it. There is no sentence for it. I'm talking to a group of theologians in London, I think it was, he said to them, the task of the theologian is to explain everything through God and to explain God as unexplainable. Unexplainable. Mystery. One doesn't know. One cannot say. One says, And when one reveals God, one is using words, is not one. One is using concepts. And once again, all the great mystics in the Catholic Church, in all the Christian churches, in all the religions are telling us those words are pointers. They're not descriptions. They don't fit. They indicate. They give you a clue. Now, tragically, people fall into idolatry because they think that where God is concerned, the word is the thing. Now, how could you get so crazy? Can you be crazier than that? That where human beings are concerned, and trees and leaves and plants and animals, the word is not the thing. But where God is concerned, the word is the thing? What are you talking about? That's why I told you last night about that famous, internationally known scripture scholar who attended this course of mine in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and said to me, my God, after listening to you, I understand that I've been an idol worshipper all my life. And as I said to you last night, he said this right out in the open there. Big man. It never struck me that I had been an idol worshipper. My idol was not made of wood or of metal. It was a mental idol. And these are the more dangerous idol worshippers. Very subtle substance that is used to produce this God, who has no name, no form, no image. There are only indications, there are clues. More about this when I talk about the scriptures. What I'm leading you to this afternoon is the following. Awareness of reality around you. Do you remember I said, what is awareness? It means to watch, to observe what is going on within you and around you. Going on, pretty accurate. Because things are going on. The trees, the grass, the plants, the animals, the rocks, all of reality is moving. One observes it. One watches it. How essential it is for the human being to observe not just himself or herself, but all of reality. You are imprisoned by your concepts. Do you want to break out of the prison? Look, observe. Spend hours observing, watching. What? Anything. The faces of people. The shape and form of trees. A bird in flight. A pile of stones. Watch the grass grow. Get in touch with things. Look at them. Hopefully, you will break out of this habit, these rigid patterns that we have all developed, that our thoughts and our words have imposed on us. Hopefully, we will see. What will we see? This thing that we choose to call reality. Whatever is beyond these words and concepts. That is a spiritual exercise connected with spirituality, connected with breaking out of your cage, out of the imprisonment of your concepts and words. How sad if you would have passed through life and never seen it again with the eyes of a child. Don't lose your concepts, they're very precious. As a matter of fact, we begin without them. Then we develop concepts, because concepts have a very positive function. Thanks to them, it would seem, we develop this thing called intelligence. We're even able to then understand the limitations of concepts. Anyone who never learnt a language, who was never programmed, was never given words and concepts, would, it would seem, have no intelligence at all. And so we're invited not to become children, but to become like little children. We have to fall from the stage of innocence. We have to be thrown out of paradise and develop this I, this me, thanks to these concepts. And then we need to return to paradise again. We need to be redeemed again. We need to put off the old man, the old nature, the conditioned self, and return to the state of the child. But without being children anymore. So we start off looking at reality in wonder. But it isn't the intelligent wonder of the mystic. It's the formless wonder of the child. Then the wonder dies and is replaced by boredom as we develop language and words and concepts. Then hopefully, if we're lucky, we return to the wonder again.